What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. We're back after, I guess, a two-week hiatus. Both Derek and I went on little mini vacations, so we're back this week. And as I said, Derek and I went on vacation, so I'm here with Derek. What's up, Derek?
What's up, How are we doing? How's tech been doing in the past couple weeks?
It's been interesting, I would say. You know, it is... Ryzen's finally out.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And
lots of stuff about that.
GTX 1080 is out. Or 1080 Ti, sorry, is out.
Yeah, that's cool.
Some other stuff that's in the news. A lot of stuff. This is around the time that a lot of stuff that we saw at CES will be coming out.
Yeah, the to be released stuff is all
So we're doing one review coming up next week that is a case that we saw. And a mouse that we actually saw at CES. Both of those we'll have reviews of this week. So pretty cool stuff, you know. But yeah, it's just that time of year coming up to Computex, which is in what, June? Yeah, end of March, early June. But yeah,
end of May.
End of May. You know. So yeah, it's kind of that time. We're just waiting because that's when we'll see a lot of big announcements, but still a lot of cool stuff. And I've done a lot of cool stuff around the office, which we'll talk about. We'll wait to talk about that at the end of the podcast. We will go into our reviews this week and talk about some tech news, and then we'll talk about what Derek and I have been up to over the past 2 weeks, I guess.
Sounds good.
So we'll start with reviews, and I have a really cool keyboard that I took a look at this week, and at first, when I heard about it, I was just kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
But after using it, it makes a huge case to go back to a membrane keyboard. That's weird for me to say.
You're definitely going to have to explain this one.
Yeah. So the keyboard that I'm talking about is the Rocket Skelter. And as I said, it is a membrane keyboard, but it's designed as a gaming keyboard, and it has a ton of useful features. And that's what makes it so unique and something that when I was using it, I literally used these features every day.
Nice.
So first, typical, you know, full-size gaming keyboard, a complement of keys as well as number pad. You have 5 programmable macro keys and all of that stuff. And with being a Rocket keyboard, you have those thumbster keys, which if you've never used are actually incredibly useful. But on top of that, this keyboard has Bluetooth built into it.
Really?
Which, you know, it might be a big deal. It might not be a big deal to some people. But the thing that's really cool about this is that it actually has an app that it connects to. And through that app, you can do a lot of different things. Some of the main things is you can view your system statistics. You install this application on your smartphone, and then you go ahead and you install it on your PC, and you can monitor like the frames a second you're getting, or your CPU temperature, or things like that. That's really cool. And the keyboard actually has an area at the front where you can mount your phone, or up to, I think it's like a 10-inch tablet up there.
Okay.
And you can see all these... So you can see all these statistics right in front of you. But you can also do things like see your APM, which a lot of like hardcore gamers want to see that, like in real time. You know, what's my APM, blah, blah, blah. You can launch games, like it comes with a game launcher. You can add all your games in there. So instead of clicking on your screen, you can just touch the, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the thing that I use the most, which is crazy, is that... there's actually two main things that I use the most. One is that it has a button that allows you to use your keyboard to type on your mobile device.
No way.
So, say I'm in the middle of a game, you know, I'm in the middle of even working. If I get a text message, I don't have to pick up my phone and do it. I just hit that button and I can type on my phone.
Game
one, it's faster.
Yeah.
Two, it's more convenient.
It doesn't break your stream.
Yeah, it doesn't break your stream. It doesn't. It just keeps you in that mode of being on your computer.
Nice.
In addition to that, this also allows you to answer calls through your gaming headset or whatever headset that you're using. So you hit answer call button, And you know, using Bluetooth, it allows you to use your allows you to use the headset that you're using, which nice. Is really cool. So again, it just allows you to not get out of game. Really, you can do things while you're in game. It's just it's really fluid the way it works. It kind of just like it just works. And you think, oh, I'm not going to use that. I'm not going to type on my keyboard to my mobile device. But once you do it and you see how convenient it is, it works really, really well.
Nice. And it's flawless. It just goes back and forth.
It's what?
Like flawless between the two. It just goes back and forth.
Yeah, you just...
get a text. It pops into the text. And then, you know, you type it out, send it, and just go right back to your game or whatever.
Yeah, all you do is, so if you're typing, you just hit that button again. Like, there's a small little button that's type the device. You press it, type on your device, press it again, and you're back in your, you know,
nice.
To typing on your PC.
Yeah.
It, you know, same thing with the answer call button. It's the same thing.
And you never had it, like, screw up or anything while you were using
no,
it?
No, not at all.
That's nice.
It worked flawlessly. I'm using iPhone 6S with... the app doesn't matter because that's actually Bluetooth, so you don't have to use their app, obviously.
Right.
You know, so it just works really, really well. I like I said, I was using it more than I thought I would, and I was really impressed with it, actually.
Okay, so aside from that being like sick, as a keyboard itself, because it
the keyboard
sort of
is
a little gimmicky. You know?
It, okay, yes. So the keyboard itself is very comfortable.
Okay.
It in no way will replace the feel and feedback of a mechanical keyboard.
Right.
No doubt.
Is it a good dome switch, though?
Yes. It's very, very good. Very, very comfortable. I actually played some games on it, surprisingly.
Yeah.
You know,
not too sloppy or anything.
Yeah, and it's cool to see, like oh, my APM is this while I'm playing this game. Like, that was really cool as well.
Yeah.
You know. So I think the software, the you know, the companion app and the Bluetooth really make this keyboard, but it's not just like a crappy keyboard with those features. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of, you know, I just, man, I like, so my plan with this is I've gone back to a mechanical keyboard here at home,
mm-hmm.
but at the office, I'm going to use this.
Nice.
As the main keyboard.
So you can just keep your workflow going.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing about if you guys don't know, I have a shared office space where it's a big open office, and I always have headphones on, and I never want to be disturbed, and I don't want to get out of that workflow, because you know when you're in that good workflow, once you get out, it's hard to get back in.
Yeah.
Especially you know,
being constantly interrupted. But you also, you don't want to ignore all that, you know, either. So
yeah.
Like when you're getting messages and stuff from people, you don't necessarily want to just turn your phone off.
Exactly, and especially when I have to send long texts or something like that, it is so much easier to type those things.
Right.
So that is that's why I'll be using it, and I really like it. The companion app is cool as well. You know, just launching apps and everything. It's and to see what's going on inside your PC, like you notice you're dropping frames in a game. Oh, maybe I'm overheating. Like you can see all that. Which is cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So I really like this. It is expensive though. It's $149. Which you can get pretty much any mechanical keyboard, and even a lot of times RGB mechanical keyboards for the same price.
Yeah, I would say so.
But
it's a toss up because yeah. that display with like so many companies have tried to like create that. Forefront of my mind would be like Logitech, their
yes.
G15 keyboard. If you remember that one,
mm-hmm.
They're always trying with that display, but like. That it's so obvious. Just use Bluetooth and in your phone, where you can do. You have unlimited options with the display, right?
Yeah, and so my thing is, if Rocket makes a mechanical keyboard that has the same features, I'm set.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
why would you use anything else?
Yeah, that would bring it all together. But again, I do think that this has enough features that it. I'm going to be using it. I mean, it's not. You know, it's.
Yeah.
I'm going to be replacing the mechanical keyboard I have at the office with this.
But do you think that it'd be worth the premium? Because I would guess that would be around a $200 keyboard.
Yeah, I think it would be more than a $200. Oh,
you
they
think?
Could keep it at $199.
I think it'd be right around $199. Yeah.
Yeah, it all depends. I think it would be worth it. Yes. If you use those Bluetooth features, it will be worth it.
Yeah. I think that the whether they would come out with that or not is going to depend on really like how well their sales do on that one, because people have to want to use the Bluetooth features.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It also, I didn't mention it, it has the audio pass through, so that's what allows to use your headphones. So if you're using something like a USB headset, I don't believe it will work. You have to use plug-in audio. Also, there is a pass-through USB, and what's great about that is that it sits right in the center of the keyboard behind it. Mm-hmm. So what that allows you to do is it allows you to easily just plug that into your mobile device to charge your mobile device.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, so smart. It's very well-done keyboard. I do like it, and I would definitely recommend it if you're looking for something like that. I wish I could, you know, there would be a way for you guys to test this to really see if you're going to use those Bluetooth features, because if you are, it's totally worth it. If you're not, you can get a mechanical for cheaper than the price of this, and you'll be 100% satisfied as well. So it kind of just comes down
kind of a toss up there.
Yeah, yeah, but it is a really good keyboard. I like it. It's one of the more interesting keyboards I've reviewed lately, and one that's actually ultra functional. It's not just a keyboard, so
cool.
So yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And then also I took a look at a micro SD card, and you know, everybody, so many people I know, especially people not in the tech space, but friends who have bought really nice cameras or GoPros or something, and they buy just the crappy SD card, and they record something and it looks crappy on playback. That's because you don't have a fast enough SD card or micro SD card to record that footage. It records at a certain bit rate, and your SD card needs to do that. If it doesn't, your playback's gonna be bad, and all of that amazing footage you've shot is gonna be useless. And a lot of times, we're at places where we only get to see it once, so
yeah,
that would really suck. So Patriot has come out with a new LX series card. It's a 256 gigabytes micro SD card, and these micro SD cards are great for, as I said, like GoPros. That's what GoPro uses. That's also what most drones use these days as well, is the micro. So this is a class 10 card. It's one of the fastest cards you can get. And all my testing, it worked right up to its specifications, around 90 megabytes a second read and write, which is really good. And it comes with the adapter. So many of these micro SDs don't come with the adapter for some reason. This comes with the adapter, so that makes it easy to pull it out of your GoPro and put it in the adapter and put it in a card reader instead of directly connecting, say, your GoPro, which would take a long time to transfer your files.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why people even do that these days, but
they do. A lot of people just don't know what they're doing, I think.
Yeah.
They just don't realize where the slow ups and the bottlenecks occur.
Yeah. So not only is this going to be fast enough to record all of your footage and photos and everything like that, but at the same time, it's going to be fast to transfer everything off, especially if you're using a card reader. But the only weird thing about this compared to a lot of other SD cards is that it only has a 2-year warranty, and that was a bit weird for me. Usually when it comes to memory products, you know, SanDisk and Kingston and some of the other ones, they offer lifetime warranties on their SD card products.
Yeah, especially considering the cost of this card.
Yeah.
Because it is, what, $174.99?
Yes.
That's right up there, you know?
Yeah.
Because like, this is really, like, not a lot of people make this investment, even though it's, you know, they usually leave it as, like, the last thing you consider is the memory, but this should be one of the top things that you, like, invest in, because it's so important in actually transferring that data.
Yeah, and it's just
storing it.
Yeah, and the 2-year warranty makes me think of reliability as well.
Exactly.
We both have shot footage and have had SD cards die, and it's extremely frustrating.
Nothing worse. I swear there's nothing worse.
Yeah, it's one of the worst things, to lose footage or to, you know, Derek and I would be working on reviews and taking shots and then have to redo it all. It's just not fun.
No.
So yeah, so this is a really great card. Again, that just 2-year warranty, you know, it's, you can't stress test these to say, oh, what is this going to be like after a year, because we wouldn't get the review out, you know.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's a good card. It performs great. I think this is something that you could make an investment in. It's just a 2-year warranty kind of,
you know, it does kind of, what worries me too is the cards that we have had die were large capacity and they were 90 meg transfer speeds.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so you never know. But it is, like I said, it's a good option. Getting up into that higher capacity as well. Once you go above 128, there's only a few manufacturers that will make these super, you know.
Yeah.
So it's good.
It's really the highest end micro SD or SD that you can get.
Yeah. So it's you know, if you're going to be shooting 4K on your GoPro or in a drone, this is something that you would definitely look at. So yeah. So that brings us to Case Mod Friday. And if you don't know, Case Mod Friday is where we feature a build or mod in the community that's been completed. And this week we have a build called Intel Expert Mode, and this comes from V1 Tech. And V1 Tech, we featured a few of his builds before. This one, taking a look at it, obviously you can see it's done for Intel, featuring different Intel products, as well as the whole Intel blue and white theme, which I think he does really well.
Was this for the PAX contest, PAX East contest?
I'm not sure.
Because I know they had one. Anyways, yeah. doesn't matter much, but I was just
yeah, curious. I'm not specifically sure if it was done for that, but obviously it was done for Intel, whether they commissioned him to do it or he did it for an Intel-related contest. But I think it's just well done. One thing I really liked about this, it's done in that Corsair Spec Alpha case, which is extremely inexpensive case.
Right.
And it's cool to see a build done in there that's done so well, because we see so many builds in these super high-end cases. And for something like this, it's pretty cool to see a nice build. And it's pretty much a build. I mean, he painted stuff and made custom backplates, but for the most part, it's just a straight-up build.
Yeah, mostly just paint.
Yeah. And that kind
of
shows you.
And he did quite a bit of LED work, I guess. You got to give him that.
Yeah, he did do the LED work. But again, this is while he does use an AIO, this is pretty much no custom water cooling. You know, anybody can buy an AIO. Mm-hmm. And I think it just turned out quite well. I just like the color and the theme and how it's all done in this. Just, you know.
Yeah, the sleeve cables. I think if you're gonna, well, I mean, you can buy them, so you don't got to go and do it yourself, but. Sleeve cabling seems like a good place to start as far as like cleaning up your build and making it look, taking it to that next level, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's
one of the things in this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and even just the painting. I mean, as simple painting some of your components will change the overall look of your build tremendously.
Yeah. So he took the Corsair. I don't know, what is it, an H110 GT or something?
IGT? Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something like that, and he just painted the tubing, the sleeve tubing, and the whole radiator and the pump, and all blue, and then, I mean, he went a little bit further and did, like, some custom backplating for the LED to make it say Intel on the pump.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that, yeah. Instead of
but
saying
other
Corsair.
Other than that,
yeah.
I mean, like, you could just leave it as the Corsair stuff, tape it off, and you could really change the way your AIO looks. You'd make it completely unique by doing that, just by painting it. And you yeah. can do that with just, you go down to the hardware store and you grab a can of Krylon paint or something else that'll adhere to the material you're painting onto. Nothing more needed. You don't need professional paint equipment.
Exactly. And that's why I like this build. It's done on, well, I mean, some of the hardware inside's pretty, you know, he has a GTX 1080. Excuse me. And but I mean, it's pretty much a basic build that a lot of people have, I feel. So
oh, totally. Yeah.
So yeah, so definitely check that out. Really cool build. As I always say, we have a full section of Case Mod Friday, tons of builds. So if you want to get inspiration or just kind of see what's going on in the modding scene or the building scene, you can kind of check out all of the builds that we have in there. And that brings us to our news this week. And not a whole lot of news as we talked about, but definitely some cool things going on. The first, we talked about the GeForce GTX 1080 Ti being out. And with it being out, we have a overclock all the way up to 3 gigahertz.
That's sick.
Yeah. So at the NVIDIA event, NVIDIA actually had a card going at 2.5 gigahertz. EVGA took it even further. Their in-house overclocker Kingpin, which if you don't know, he's their in-house overclocker. He actually has a lot of it. He has a few graphics cards, his own custom graphics cards.
He's kind of a legend in the
overclocking. Yeah, pretty much an overclocking legend. He pushed the card all the way to 3 gigahertz, approximately 3.024 gigahertz. And it was
3.024 megahertz.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And Yeah, and he was running on Ellen too, so put it that way. And this is done on the Founders Edition of the card, but he did some custom modding to the PCB to bypass certain voltage locks and things like that. But yeah, I mean that's a crazy.
Yeah, it's a really high overclock. Considering that the previous record was a 1060, which is usually like lower end parts. For whatever reason, maybe it's demand, like demand on the hardware or whatever. You can tend to overclock them to higher speeds. Doesn't necessarily make them faster. You just pump a bunch of voltage through lower end processor, and they'll run. You can make them run faster, but to see it on a higher end part like this, beating out that 1060, even though it was only by 12 megahertz, that's pretty cool. Yeah. A significant performance increase.
Obviously, yes. So very, very cool. I think. You know, because that was the big thing with the TI is that NVIDIA did change the power delivery system compared to the 1080. And with that, you'll definitely see a lot higher overclocks and a lot of custom cards being able to have greater factory overclocks as well.
Yeah, for sure. Without super custom power delivery.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, really, really cool to see.
Is this 2 8 pins, or is this 6 and an 8? 4 and an
8?
I'm not sure.
Good question.
Should have probably looked more, but...
Yeah, I believe... 2 8 pins
would be pretty nice, but that's kind of a back-in-the-day sort of thing.
Yeah, I believe it's a 6 and an 8. I wish I could find...
See a picture of the pinout.
Yeah. Why is this such a bad quality file? It's like every time... It is a 6 and an 8.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet the Kingpin Edition will come out with 2 8 pins.
Yeah, so a lot of the custom cards that you'll see that come out, which a couple of them we'll talk about today, they will have 2 8 pins because they're pushing the card a lot further. But,
right.
But yeah, pretty cool. Great stuff from Kingpin. He always has crazy high overclocks on graphics cards. So
yeah. I'd be really curious to see exactly what parts he actually modded onto the PCB. What things we might see in like the Kingpin edition or other custom versions as far as power delivery goes, whether it's, you know, bigger caps, more caps, or whatever else, you know?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I wish we could see that. He's probably not showing it because he wants to keep that high.
Yeah, that's kind of a trade secret for him.
Yeah, so... but hopefully we will have maybe an announcement of a Kingpin edition coming soon.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, we should see. Also talking about the GTX 1080 Ti, Colorful released some renders of their iGame GTX 1080 Ti, and it is something that we've never seen on a GPU before, and that is a full-color LCD on the side of the card that shows the clock speed, temperatures, load, etc.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool.
I think that's pretty awesome. I'm surprised we haven't seen that before.
Yeah, you like look at it, you're like, oh yeah, we should have done that.
Yeah, like this is pretty obvious. The color LCD has been around for ages. Why have we not put one on a GPU before?
Yeah, so a lot of graphics cards will have LEDs that show load or temperature, things like that, but this is actually... It sits on the side of the card, typically where you would see like the GeForce logo or whatever the card logo. This is actually an LCD that again shows, you know, the temperature and things like that. It's just really, really cool. Their iGame GTX 1080 Ti is a triple slot card, so pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, and this card does have the 2 8 pin, as you said.
Yeah.
So it's gonna obviously have a custom PCB. And it should have a very nice factory overclock as well. So no word on pricing for this, but it should be available sometime next month. So,
but being that it's colorful, are we going to see this from U.S. retailers?
Not unless you order it and get it shipped.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so that's kind of...
Another really cool, colorful thing that we won't see here in the U.S.
That's the sad part. Sad part about that and Galaxy is we don't see a lot of their products here.
You know what will be really cool, though, is when people mod the BIOS for this, you can do anything to that LCD. It
yeah, that's the cool part about this, is that somebody's going to get their hands on it and modify the LCD or do other things with it, which I think is going to be really cool.
Yeah. Combine that with all the RGB LEDs in your case. Oh, man.
There's a lot of stuff.
Galore.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you can do.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Lights
so talk
on everything.
So talking about the GTX 1080 Ti, MSI revealed their entire lineup, which is made up of five cards. So the big one, and the one that most people either get or are talking about, is their Gaming X card. That is kind of their flagship card, you know. And then you go down from there, you have the Armor card, and then you have your Aero card. But if you go up from that, you have the Seahawk EK, which comes with a custom water block made by EK on it. So that is something you would add to your custom loop. And then you have the Seahawk, which is built in conjunction with Corsair and comes with an AIO to cool it all. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a cool lineup.
Yeah, it's
a
nice lineup.
You know what's really occurring to me, though? Why did we not buy stock in EK like 6 years ago or so?
They are
in everything now. Those guys are crushing it.
Yeah, I mean, they're the top of the water cooling game, too. If you think about it, I mean, most people that I know have used EK parts. And if you look at all the builds out there, everybody's using EK.
Something,
and then,
somewhere, yeah.
You know, they're making deals with motherboard manufacturers, with graphics card manufacturers. I mean,
that's what I mean. They're on like basically every motherboard. They're here as the stock water cooled custom piece on the MSI 1080 Ti. I mean, like, they are killing it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So props to EK.
Yeah, it's I think over the past, I would say 2 years, they've really, really made a concerted effort to take things to the next level. So.
Yeah, to be that brand, that forefront water cooling brand.
Yeah, so, you know, hats off to them. And obviously, awesome lineup from MSI as well.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so we'll move from graphics cards, exciting graphics cards, ones that I want, to another product that I definitely would want, is that details have leaked on a Ryzen processor that's a 16-core, 32-thread beast. And this is not to be confused with, which we've already talked about and has been announced by AMD, is the Naples Enterprise or Server CPU. This is what is going to be the high-end desktop Ryzen chip. You know, so Ryzen 7 is out, and that is, I guess, even though this performance is kind of spot on with high-end desktop parts from Intel, Ryzen 7 is the enthusiast part, I guess. It would be the Core i7-7700K, and then this high-end desktop part is obviously in line with, like, the 6900K and things like that as far as staging where you would want to put
them. It does get sort of confused, though, considering AMD was comparing their Ryzen 7 parts to Intel's high-end desktop range.
Yeah, it definitely does get confusing. But it looks like you will see a Ryzen 16-core 32-thread parts come out eventually. And they're going to use a different chipset. They're going to use the X399 chipset. Which is interesting.
Which is terribly familiar sounding.
Yeah. you know, but they are using the 300 nomenclature.
Sure,
so
sure they are.
For Ryzen 7, you have the X370, you know, so this is the X99. And it's going to use a new socket. It's the LGA SP3R2.
Yeah.
150-watt TDP, which makes sense. And it basically, this CPU is designed as an MCM, so you have two Ryzen 7 style dies that are tied together.
Okay.
And this will have a lower clock speed, which that's normal when you get into higher core counts. So 2.4 gigahertz, and it boosts up to 2.8 gigahertz. And this one will feature quad channel DDR support.
Which is good. Now, how deep the support goes is yet to be known.
Yes. So, nobody knows how much this would cost, but again, if you're keeping this based on pure CPU performance, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but if you keep this pure CPU performance, if you're going to double the performance of an 1800X at under $1,000 on a high-end desktop platform,
right,
this is going to be killer.
Presuming it does all the things you think it's going to do.
Yes, totally. So, yeah, it's cool because we thought Ryzen 7 was the highest of the consumer desktop parts.
You know, this is very familiar in that they did this with their GPU range.
Yes.
Essentially, they're just creating a dual CPU part
that's yes.
on the same, you know, chip. So it's like having a dual GPU graphics card, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they're, it's not really, it's almost not a new, another CPU. It's just two Ryzen 7s together.
Well, yeah, and it's a totally different package, and
yeah,
obviously
it's,
the
chip, a different chipset.
Yeah, the chipset enables more things, and you're gonna have more PCI Express lanes. You're gonna have more obviously quad channel memory and maybe some, you know.
It just seems like a cheap way to do it to me. It's not really a 16 core processor in the sense that it's not all, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's not all on like
yeah.
designed as one.
This is not confirmed. So okay. we don't know specifically how it's designed. This is what people okay. are saying it is, but don't know. Okay. But yeah, I get what you're saying. But this is kind of interesting. This, you know, for all of those people who were thinking about using Ryzen for a workstation, because again, AMD did compare this to the Intel high-end desktop parts. They did compare Ryzen 7 to that, right?
Yeah, totally.
So this gives you kind of hope that you can even build something even better. You know, you can build a workstation with Ryzen that's really going to be ultra performance and everything that you would hope it would be. So obviously this is, from what we've heard, this is months out, at least 2 months, if not longer.
Yeah, they should take their time. I think they should take their time and they should make sure this does everything it should do and is very comparable in features to Intel parts. You know, we want to see a fleshed out part. We don't
yes.
want to see something that's, you know, it's good but this or that.
Yeah, I think at Computex that could be a good release time for them.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but we'll see. But it is cool to see. It's really exciting. Again, this is a really exciting time. A lot of cool stuff going on. So
yeah, it's yeah. Even though, well, we'll get more into it here.
Yeah. So talking about Ryzen, MSI has announced AXMP for the Ryzen platform. So one of
why
the
would they have to do that, Bob?
So one of the big issues with the Ryzen platform is memory support. I went through this all this past week because I got my Ryzen chip, and I had crazy memory issues. So basically, if you've been on Intel, which I assume a lot of you have for the past, I don't know how many years, all you do is you have an XMP profile that you just go into your BIOS, or even a lot of the motherboard companion software allows you mm-hmm. to set it, and you basically set it and forget it. It sets all your settings, so it sets your speed, it sets your voltages, it sets your timings, it does it all for you, and it's very easy, and it just works.
As well as it helps to just simply with memory recognition.
Yes.
In general.
Yes. So with Ryzen, you do not have that.
Why would we not have that?
It makes no sense to me, to be honest. I was very frustrated this week. So with Ryzen, you don't have that. And with Ryzen, it's very particular when it comes to memory. For example, with the Ryzen system that I have here, I wanted to use a DDR4 3200 kit, which was actually sent to me by a company who wanted me to test. They sent me a Ryzen or an AM4 motherboard, this memory, as well as a cooler for Ryzen. So this all should work. They're sending it to me specifically for
yeah.
Ryzen. This
yeah.
all should work.
This wasn't off the cuff. This was prepared.
Yeah. Now, granted, to do my initial testing, I did not use their motherboard, but I used another one, who has something much like this AXMP, let's say, and it didn't work. it was not stable whatsoever at 3200. So you can move it down and you go to 2933. Didn't work. 2666 didn't work. My memory would only run at 2133.
What?
Yeah. Obviously, there's different... And this is with
but
manuals...
But I run DDR3 faster than that.
Yeah. This is with manual settings. This is with running their version of the AXMP. Like, it's just... the plain and simple, the memory support for Ryzen is really bad, and it's not clearly defined. Like, I was reading all of these articles about it, trying to learn, and it's very confusing. If you're not a tech person, it's super confusing.
So, like, a guy coming in off the street, and he says, well, AMD, that's cheaper. I'm going to buy these parts. Maybe won't have the best time in the world with it.
Yeah, there should be at least a compatibility list. But the biggest thing is that they should have had something that's like, I don't know if Intel has XMP patented or like that process. You know what I mean? Like that
process.
Yeah,
but you couldn't patent the process. That would be like patenting like a processor in general.
Yeah.
That'd be like allowing a patent on computing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? A hardware recognition tool? All you would have to do is code it slightly different and it wouldn't be the same product.
Yeah, I have no clue why it's not in there. But the memory compatibility is a big issue, and it's different for different, like the platform. Again, we'll talk about this at the end of the podcast, but the platform's very unstable in my opinion. Okay. So to help alleviate this, MSI has created AXMP. I don't have specific, I don't believe it's even out yet, but they announced it. I don't know if this actually is a feature that fixes it completely. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It
and
might
never
just
use it ourselves.
Yeah, so I can't really tell you, but for how unstable memory support is, I can't say that this is going to be the fix. Yeah, so yeah. I'm not specifically sure, but it's good to see motherboard manufacturers doing this, because this is something that's highly needed for the platform, in my opinion. So.
Yeah. I think that it's odd that we're seeing the motherboard and not the chip manufacturer. But
yeah.
Maybe they're working hand in hand, and it's just they're the
yeah,
ones
I don't know
it.
What the deal know. Is with that, but there should be something. There should be a way to get the memory to work the way you want it to. And it's just like a lot of times to actually, from what I've read in forums and things all this week, to actually get memory running at your preferred speed, you actually have to, like back in the day, like you have to overclock your processor to actually get the memory running at the speed that you want, which isn't good, especially in my case when I needed this processor to run at its spec'd out to test. You know, it's a mess.
It's very possible that it's the power delivery system in that one thing is connected to another, so if you don't overclock the processor, it doesn't like giving more voltage to the RAM.
Yeah,
it could easily be one of those things, or it could not. I would guess, simply put, that AMD built this from the ground up, essentially, and that's a huge task and to do in a competitive time frame, and that this is probably one of the things that slipped through the crack. They got it working well enough, and they had to release that way.
Yeah,
that'd be my guess.
That's in my opinion, I think that it wasn't tested enough and it was released too early. But obviously, you have to be competitive and you have to release things at a certain time. So
yeah,
We'll talk about again all that closer. We're almost at the end, but talking about Ryzen, it looks like Ryzen 5 processors are out in the wild. So. Ryzen 5 was announced, and I believe it's supposed to come out. I forget the date. Probably should have put that in this post. But Ryzen 5 processors have been found being delivered from online retailers as well as retailers. You can just go in the store and they're there.
They're just full retail products.
Yeah, out there. In different places like the Philippines and Brazil, I guess they they've all jumped the gun on the sales embargo, it looks like, and people have them now. And a lot of people are really excited for Ryzen 5 because that is the performance segment. That is where, that is basically, if you want to compare it to a graphics card, that is the GTX 1070. That is your sweet spot. Price performance, you know, that is what a lot of people are excited for when it comes to Ryzen. So it's cool to see that they're out there. That means we should probably by tomorrow or at some point, we should see some, and if they're not already out, we haven't covered it yet, but we should see some benchmarks, leaked benchmarks.
Yeah, especially if anybody's able to buy them, you would think somebody's at least purchasing those from those people.
And they could have memory issues and not get the boot.
There is always that.
Yeah, no, but...
day one bug.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's cool. It's cool to see this stuff out there. It's kind of funny how we have these, like, sales embargoes or, like, embargoes when stuff's going to be available and then it comes out early. I always like that.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to be easily advertising it within Google, though. So.
Yeah, it's... Sorry, I don't believe
Google
it's
going to get you one.
It's not a lot of U.S. It's more like foreign China, market, Brazil. Yeah. But they still have the same embargo. It's not like, you know...
Right.
But you'll be able to get them very soon. So definitely, again, with Ryzen, I would say wait, but that's my opinion.
Let's talk about it more.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a little bit. I want to finish a lot of news first. So, one really bad story this week is that PC DRAM prices will continue to rise in 2017. And this story actually is pretty interesting. So we've seen DRAM prices as a whole increase. They've increased considerably, not only in the PC space, but obviously DRAM for pretty much everything. I mean, everything that takes DRAM, whether it's smartphones, and the reason for that is the supply is so huge right now. Everything that we have, all of these devices use DRAM. Everything does, pretty much.
Right.
And what the manufacturers are doing is that they're because PC DRAM it accounts for less than 20% of the overall DRAM production. So most DRAM is going to smartphones, it's going to other things non-PC related.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the PC market is severely undersupplied, which means prices go up. Demand's higher.
Well, it's essentially it's everything we use now.
Yeah.
It's not just the phones, it's your phones, your TV, everything.
Yeah, so. And that just makes DRAM prices across the board go up, not just for PC. But for PC, it's hard because they're not the DRAM manufacturers are not upping production. And one really interesting thing that I don't know what you want to call it. It's pretty shady. But it looks like the top memory makers such as Samsung, Hynix, and Micron have opted for coexistence as the best way to maximize their own profitability. So what they're doing, instead of having aggressive pricing and price wars and performance wars, they're going to coexist, only produce so much, and they'll overall have better profitability.
So those that sort of pricing scheme and production scheme would be illegal in this country.
Yes, these things are not made in the United States.
Yes, nor are their countries based or their companies based in the United States.
Yes,
Yeah, that's quite non-competitive.
Yeah, so it the report says that these top suppliers will keep their expenditures for 2017 at the same level as last year or lower, which means they're not going to be spending money building or making more or building new factories or things like that to produce more.
No, I mean, they have enough to sell their other devices, and they'll just drive the prices up for everything else.
Yeah, so that's super shady. Yeah.
Maybe we should suggest to them that, like, hey, Samsung, you're in South Korea. We're just going to pull out and let that crazy North Korean guy have at you.
Yeah.
<it's, laughs> Please lower your DRAM prices.
But, again, you know, the biggest thing that I tell people when these stories come out is get your DDR4 or get your SSDs now because the prices of them are going to go up. We've already seen it.
They have, yeah. Yeah. They've already gone up.
Yeah, so we've already seen it. It's going to happen, and it's not going to change, at least. It's not going to flatten for a while, it seems like. It's going to continue to rise. So the biggest thing is to get your things now if you can.
Yeah.
Which is too bad if you're doing a future build.
Yes.
Planning a build that you can't quite afford yet.
Yeah, so talking about memory.
Let's talk about memory.
Yeah, so going into our final news story of the day.
Here's something you can't afford.
Well, these are expensive too, but they are really nice. So we talked about products at that we saw at CES that are finally coming out. Yeah. This is one of them. This is Corsair's Vengeance RGB DDR4. So we've already seen the Vengeance LED memory. I actually have a kit here. They're really awesome. It has a light bar that goes across the top that looks awesome. But with these ones, it's an RGB one. And it's an RGB one that doesn't have any external connectors like some of the early ones that we saw last year. So this is all done through the SMI bus, and you can control it with Corsair Link's software.
Sweet.
And it should all tie into all this other RGB stuff as well, I believe.
Yeah, I would think so. Like, you mean as far as syncing it with your board or whatever?
Yes, I believe these with that as well. So I'm pretty sure. Actually, yes, they do, because I remember the demo now that I remember it. it should tie into everything. This one and the Kingston one should tie right into that.
Yeah, especially considering that it uses Corsair Link, which Corsair Link also controls the motherboard. So
yeah, so these are now available. So if you're looking to do a build and you want the RGB memory, there's this that's currently out. There is the, what is it, the G-Skill?
Maybe. Yep, I think so.
And
I thought I remember covering that.
I forget. There's a couple other ones. Because there's a lot out right now, but the older ones use external connectors. They're not just fully contained units. So there's like 3 or 4 kits that are fully contained units that are out right now. So again, everything's RGB, so this is another way to get even more RGB in your system. So
yes. Now, I gotta say, click on the link, go to Corsair's page and watch the video, because I was like, okay, cool, it's another RGB thing, until I watched the video. They're a little, what do they call it, micro... or micro, the logo on the top of it, the little Corsair ship. It is okay. I'm gonna click on the link so that I can remember exactly what it's called.
I'm watching the video now.
Okay. It's these tiny perforations in the top.
That is pretty sweet. So
of the RAM of the heat shield or the heat sink, and it looks so cool. And it makes me think that we can do anything now. Because it's perfect.
So go to the Corsair Vengeance RGB page. We have it linked in our article. If you go to that, there's a video, and it shows a close-up view of this kit. And yeah, it's
awesome.
It does,
yeah, you got to see the video.
It does it justice. All these videos do, it does it so much more justice. So
So
that's... completes our news for the week, and we'll talk about what we have coming up next week. As I talked about, AMD finally sent me a Ryzen sample, so I have the Ryzen 7 1700. That is the $329 part. It is the one that does not have XFR, but it's still an 8-core, 16-thread processor, which I've been testing all week. And as I talked about, I had the memory issues. Again, it's both motherboard manufacturer as well as AMD's fault, I would say. But
who do you think, whose fault is it more?
AMD.
Yeah, for sure.
So I had a lot of those issues, but I have fully tested it. The review is done, and it's actually going to be up. But if you're listening to this, we're going to put this up Sunday night. It is Sunday night, but this podcast will go up Sunday night. But this, by the time you listen to the podcast, probably the review will be up. So definitely check it out. But
nice.
I do like the performance. There are issues in the platform, and not only with memory, but optimization things that aren't there yet with games and within Windows, which I talk about in the review. So, but it was cool. Okay. It's cool to review a new part, especially basically the most anticipated piece of PC hardware in recent memory.
I would say, man, it's the most anticipated piece of hardware in the past, like, 3 or 4 years, I would almost say.
Yeah, so it's very, very cool to get this and actually test it and play with it. While it was frustrating for the reasons that I talked about, it's still a good part for doing certain things. And it's, while compared to Intel, it doesn't stack up totally.
Yeah.
In some tests, the fact that if you compare it to Bulldozer, which is the previous generation, it knocks it out of the park. So,
right, but is that really the fair comparison? I mean,
I think that if you compare its performance gains from Bulldozer to Zen,
yeah,
if you compare that to Intel's over their architectures, it kills it.
Yeah,
if you think,
like,
about it that,
like,
way,
it's almost like saying, like, comparing Intel current generation to, like, early Pentium, sort of.
Well, yeah, but what I mean is
massive gains. Like, I think that the comparison has to be made between current Intel and AMD. Like, it's one thing to fall back and, like, say, oh, well, it's much better than Bulldozer. Sure, it's much better than Bulldozer, but Bulldozer was terrible compared to Intel parts.
Oh, yeah, of course. But what I mean is the fact that AMD said, we're going to completely redesign this, we need this massive increase, this part sucked, it didn't make us competitive, so we're going to do that, I think that is incredibly impressive. In the fact,
you're totally right there.
Yeah, but now, as it compares to Intel parts, I don't want to ruin my review, but there are certain things that Intel parts do better. Obviously, what this part has is that it is highly threaded, you know, 8 core, 16 threads. So if you are doing highly multi-threaded processes, or you have applications or games that make use of those cores, you're going to see a better performance. If you're doing single-threaded, it's kind of on the same page. So
yeah,
so you just have to, like, again, read my review, you'll talk about it all, but yeah, it was really cool to see these new things, and I, you know, it's cool to see it firsthand, you know what I mean, because you see it and
certainly
you can read benchmarks all day. The stuff's been out because we didn't get this at launch, so, you know, it's been out for a few weeks now, but to actually get it in my hand and play with it, it's really cool. So
Yeah, I'll save everything, all my questions. We'll do another podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week, for sure.
So I won't ask you.
Yeah. So also, a product that we saw at CES, that is, it was announced earlier this month, but retail availability is Tuesday, and that's when we'll have the review, is the Cooler Master Master Case Pro 6. I am a huge fan, a massive fan of the Cooler Master Master Case series. It's just great overall for builders. It's not super crazy. It doesn't have all this extra crap that you don't need. Inside's totally modular, and this is the next version. And it is really nice. That's all I have to say. It's a good case. I'm actually completing the conclusion, so I haven't fully wrote it. I'm kind of, like, mixed on this one.
Okay.
The Master Case, all of the Master Case 5s, I really liked.
Right.
I reviewed all of them, and I really like them. This one's just a tad different, and I don't want to go into it yet, but it is a good case. It's super easy to build in. I really didn't have any issues. It's well made and everything. It just has a couple things that I'm just on the fence on.
Aesthetically, personally, I much prefer this to the 5s.
Yes, but that's another reason that I don't like it.
Oh. Ooh.
It's plasticky.
Drama. Oh.
I really like the Master Case 5s because they were, like, hard and, like, you know, it was like, tough, and it was just, like, well-made. It was, like, getting this nice piece of hardware that, like, I don't know, metal. Like, a good, like, it was just tough. And this, the panels, most of the case is all steel.
Yeah.
The top, back, and front panels are plastic, and just for that Master Case 5, when I first got it, and this is when Cooler Master was they were, like, kind of fading away as a case brand, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's, like, and I was like, yes, this is good quality. I'm gonna pick it up, and it's not gonna break. This is kind of like,
oh no.
Not like it's bad, but it's like,
it kind of goes like, and I guess in a way the 5s were more, they resembled older, cooler Master cases, right? Like the Cosmos.
Yeah.
And this does move away from that, and if it's cheap, ouch.
Yeah, so that's the...
This is kind of like the half.
Yeah, so, and being a pro series, so we had the Master Case 5, and then you have the Master Case Pro 5 or whatever. Yeah. This is the pro version, and being the pro version, I don't know.
I mean, they might be doing things with the panels. I mean, I don't know, not having seen it, that like the process to build them out of aluminum or steel would be expensive or difficult, but there's nothing cheapens the feel of your case like cheap plastic panels on the outside, that's for sure.
It's, well, the panel, it's the, so the top in the front and the back, to keep that like whatever look they're going for. If you look at the case from the side, it has this really cool look. Mm-hmm. So to achieve that, the panels are like angled, and to do that cheap, not cheaply, but less expensive, you do it with plastic, and
right,
these panels pop up to enable better airflow.
Yeah,
and to do that, you it would be much harder to do with steel.
Yeah, you'd have to have like a slide system or something.
Yeah, so that's why they did it, and it makes sense for that reason. But I just, again, that initial feel of like that Master Case 5, I was like, yes, you know,
it's tough to beat an all metal chassis.
Yeah, so again, we'll talk about it next week. I don't want to go into it too much, but it is a good case, and awesome that we definitely get to do the launch with them, so I'm excited. Cool. And another product that I saw, let's see, you were not at this meeting with me. This was the Epic Gear Morpha X, and this is a really interesting mouse. Now, we reviewed, I forget which keyboard we reviewed for Morpha X, which had the same type of modularity. It was a keyboard, and it just didn't work for them as a keyboard. For in my opinion, you don't need modularity when it comes to a keyboard. Maybe your switches, but that's it. But they did too much on that keyboard.
Yeah,
this is a little.
Is this the one where you pulled the?
Yeah.
That was not good.
So for this, for a mouse, they've done it a little. They've done the same thing. It's fully modular, and not just like you can change a couple things. Like literally everything in this mouse, you can swap out. So it comes with two different sensors that you can swap out. It comes with two sets of switches, both Omrons, but I forget the different types. You know, it has weight system in it. It has two different covers as well. You get a white one and sort of a gunmetal
gray. Yeah, gunmetal gray.
Yeah, you get all of that in there, and it's really easy to take the whole thing apart, which is cool. So I believe you get a laser sensor as well as an optical sensor. So, you know, this is for people who maybe want a mouse who have two different types of styles or like an optical over a laser for certain games. You know, it's interesting. I haven't had a whole lot of time because this is the last review I'm doing this week, but it's still pretty cool. And it comes in this nice like carrying case and everything like that too. So,
I'm curious to find out what you think, like, why it's necessary to have like a swappable sensor, because
don't we just
change the sensor speed with the software?
That's my big thing with this one, because I get the switches. The switches make sense, and that makes sense in a keyboard as well. Mm-hmm. Having different switches for maybe different buttons and what you do, right?
Yeah.
But the changeable sensor is the thing that's, because sensors is one of the more expensive things about a mouse. And if you're including two, that's going to hike up, I don't know how much this is, but that's going to hike up the price of your mouse.
Yeah, it would seem like it.
So that's my biggest thing with this review, is to find out, one, can I actually really tell the difference in the sensor? Two, do I need both sensors? So that's what I'm, that's kind of the whole thing with this review, but that will be next week as well. So three great reviews coming this upcoming week, and that basically brings us to the end of this podcast. The first week I was away.
Yeah.
The first week you missed the podcast. So I went to Florida, which was awesome. At that time, it was still pretty cold here in Pittsburgh. So it was good to get away.
It was pretty cold everywhere.
Yeah, to be on the beach and it was just nice. It's like, this is the second year in the row I've done this trip with some of my friends. And it's just good to get away. And it was a lot of those friends don't live in Pittsburgh. They live in different areas, so it's cool to see them. Nice. So I got to see everybody, so it was really good, and it was just a great trip, and it gave me time to kind of learn the A6300 camera, which I bought, which we talked about.
Yeah, good excuse to shoot it.
Yeah, so I shot pretty much every day, and I did some really cool stuff, and did some cool slow-mo, and it's really cool to learn the camera more. It really helped me learn the camera more as well, so that was fun. And then you went, like,
camping? I went to Kentucky. Yeah, oh, no, I didn't go camping. Okay. I went to cycling, like, camp, training camp.
Oh, cool.
Just, like, hurt myself for 4 days, so... It was,
but you were like
hard.
In some cabin thing or something.
Yeah, we were in. It was really nice, dude. This cabin, I would buy it in a heartbeat. But it was, you. We talk about, we make fun of our friend Mark Vaughn for like living nowhere, dude. This was straight up. There might have been 1,000 people living in the county.
That's like, crazy.
It was in the middle of nowhere.
How did you but find it?
The guys from my team, they've stayed there for a few years. So,
oh, it's cool.
Yeah, it's nice. The roads are beautiful there. Just hilly as all get out, and like no traffic, just a whole bunch of hillbilly. How many cars can you fit in your yard? You know, how many dogs can one family own? You know, like, yeah.
Sounds like West Virginia.
It could be. Yeah. It was an interesting trip, but yep.
Yeah. So we both were away, and then, also this week, which I wanted to talk about, which I will do, I'm going to be doing a video on anyways, but, I completely redid the home office, which I'm sitting in now, and it's ultra functional. Two, I changed the entire way I shoot products, so you'll see that definitely in the Cooler Master. You'll see it a little bit in the Ryzen review, but you'll definitely see it in the Cooler Master review. You'll see the backdrops different and things like that. Also, I got one of those desks that move up and down, which I'm pretty pumped about. Nice. So autonomous, the company that makes it reach out to me and ask me if I wanted one, and I said, obviously I do. So I got that, but went to IKEA and spent a bunch of money and got shelves, and like there's so much more space in this home office, and I feel like I'm going to be ultra productive here, so I'm really excited that I did this, and it's going to help with production of things, I think computers and everything else, so I'm pretty pumped about that. So yeah, that was pretty much everything. Did you do anything else this week since you've been back?
I bought a house.
Oh, you actually bought a house.
I didn't know that.
You didn't tell me that. You said you were trying to sell your current house.
No.
I didn't know that actually meant that you actually purchased another one.
Yeah, I went ahead and I bought another one.
Nice.
Just in case, you know. Sometimes you want a backup plan.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is it close to where you currently live?
It is, yeah. It's nice. Just a nicer house, essentially.
There you go. Well, you're going to be moving, and that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I'm going to be crazy busy now. But, yeah, it should be good once life settles down again.
Yeah, well, it's like moving, it's just like this whole thing of redo in my office. Like, I literally didn't do anything computers work for like 2.5 days because I had this mess, and now it's just like you have to commit to doing it. But then once you, like, if my home office would be different than what it is right now, like if it was the old, I'd be not in the same like excited and like better
changes
mind
your
frame.
Mindset. It does,
it's so much better now.
Changes, I think change is good for the brain.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I like obviously like I organized everything because it was like a mess, and I have like all these bins with all these, you know, all my stuff, like, you know. And I'm sure like once you move into your new place, you'll be organized, and it'll be like, you know, you'll have everything.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah,
yeah. So that's awesome. Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks.
And like that is basically it, guys. I think we had a really solid podcast, probably because we didn't do it in 2 weeks. You know,
saved it up.
Yeah, we saved it up for this good podcast. Hopefully, I had some computer issues this week as well, but hopefully our audio is good too. This is the first time I'm actually using the mic at this desk setup and how I have everything connected to the computer, so hopefully I sound good. But yeah, so as always, everything will be in our show notes page. So as we're talking, we say check this out. You can go ahead and click the link and click through and learn even more. And we're on all of your favorite podcasts and software websites. Just search us, Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.